You have been through a lot as a congregation over the last 2.5 or 3 years. Many of you have been through more than others. In 6 days, Candidate Week will begin. An opportunity to get to know and vote on the candidate for settled ministry. This will be the first stage of what will be, I believe, the greatest era in the life of this church it has ever known. Now, at this stage, members of the congregation tend to focus on their candidate. What is she like? What color is her hair? What kind of minister will she be? How will it affect my life? And so on and so on. I come before you today with a radical, even subversive suggestion. Dare I say it? Rather than focus on the candidate, I encourage you to focus on yourselves. By asking the question, how can we be the best congregation we can be as we embark on this wonderful new epoch of our congregation? And I encourage you to explore this question by focusing on all the ways you seek to align your lives with the core principles of our religious movement and the specific values and ends of this congregation. Let me put this effort we make here in a much, much larger context. The attempt by human beings to articulate and define principles that will help the human being rise out of the chaos and confusion of life as it is normally lived is a wondrous story. The question for the human being has always been, how can we arise out of the chaos of life guided by instincts, wired in emotionality, and the repressive belief systems the human creates into something that is better, that fulfills the human life socially and individually much more than the chaos that is otherwise possible? This is rooted in the evolutionary story itself. For there are examples in the animal kingdom, of which we are a part, of course, the so-called lower forms of animals, of acts of compassion, of sacrifice, of kindness, of honoring their dead and doing peacemaking, as can be seen, for example, in the lives of chimpanzees and elephants. Mark Beckoff is one of a growing number of scientists who casts light on how animals demonstrate empathy and compassion and can exhibit even a basic sense of knowing right from wrong. But the human being is capable of magnifying and extending and sustaining this innate moral impulse found in nature, particularly in the mothering instinct, by articulating and committing the principles based on careful reflection. When Coretta Scott King said, "For too long we have treated violence with violence, and that's why it never ends," she was seeing through and beyond our emotional automatic responses to a way, to a possibility that is uniquely human and represents our latent capacity for wisdom. When Abraham Lincoln developed the principle in his personal life that every person he found himself disliking and even hating, he would make a commitment to get to know that person better, he was articulating a moral principle which was uniquely human, which took him above and beyond innate emotional responses. Why we have institutions called churches and synagogues and temples and the like is that the effort to promote and inculcate principles needs institutional support. For it is so difficult for we human beings to clarify within our own minds what principles to follow, what gives life and what does not, and then to make the decision to follow them, and then to commit to them consistently over time and to stay true to them in the face of internal and external stresses and pressures, especially that exerted by social groups. For even in response of the leadership of the most powerful and incisive principles, it is not easy for the human to be guided by principles in a sustained manner. But UUs have yet another level of challenge. Human beings have historically justified the use of principle through some form of authoritarianism, the charisma of a leader, or in other inherently power over ways. Things evolved this way, I believe, because it was the only way the human would submit to the difficulties inherent in following principles in the face of the pressures of instinct and peer groups. But for better or for worse, the Unitarian Universalist engages in the issue of principles in a way which honors the autonomy and freedom of the individual. And there is yet another level of challenge for the UU. Many of us are religious refugees. We have fled spiritual oppression. And out of that experience, people come to Unitarian churches with an implicit contract in their mind. Namely, there are no rules here, and we don't have to believe anything. Actually, just the reverse is true. We UUs have developed a system of principles requiring the engagement of the individual, not merely the passive assent to dogma. We are a covenantal and principle-based religious community. We create the principles and ends we choose to live by, guided by history, tradition, and best practices. And this is different and more difficult than any other religious group. With this background, let me share a brief reflection on our first principle, the worth and dignity of all persons, as a way of illustrating how principles function in our religious community, what their purpose is, what they are meant to do, and how they serve society. Over time, as a minister, I've developed a few impressions. And one of them is that almost everyone is engaged continually in a struggle for affirmation, for being valued and validated. It is a strong and powerful force in people's lives. And so many people come to our churches and say, will this be a place where I am at last validated as a person? We humans seek validation in awards, honors, relationships, in money, in power, in attention, in the opinion of others, in status, in a feeling of being better than others by any means necessary, whether that is materially or intellectually or in a thousand different ways. And many, many people live in a kind of hell on earth in which they continually look for acceptance, genuine and profound acceptance, but they cannot find it. Or they find it, but are disappointed. But in this hell in which people are seeking acceptance. They devalue themselves through a continual calculation of their own value based on comparisons with others. Does my skin color make me valuable or invaluable? Does my ethnicity make me valuable or not valuable? Am I married or single, and how does that affect my value? Am I beautiful or handsome by the standards of beauty and handsomeness that society takes on? Am I the right age? Am I young enough so that I'm pleasing to others? Or am I old and therefore becoming less valuable to society? Am I successful in the ways that society calculates success or not? And through these infinite number of calculations, people continually measure themselves and seek an answer to the question, am I valuable? So many problems in the church, as I have experienced it, arise from this yearning of people to get validation by any means necessary. There was a time, for example, where I was thrown off and confused by people in UU congregations. I know there's none of these type individuals in this congregation, but by people who do cutoffs. That is, they say, if you don't do things my way, I'm leaving. I don't know if you've ever known anybody like that before. But I was also very confused by, there's a few of those in the UU circles, and then confused by people who want to fight continually. And over the years, at certain times, I found people like that irritating or disturbing. But then over the years, I began to realize that those were the people who most profoundly and deeply wanted validation. And for example, I've known many people who cause fights and disruptions in congregations, and I discovered that was the only way they could stay connected to a community, is through argumentativeness. So this paradigm of understanding people as seeking acceptance illuminates a lot of different things. And there are people who have found a way to obtain the belief, the high ground, that they are indeed winners in these games of losers and winners. But they are in the minority. And ultimately, this game leads nowhere. Nothing can ever give us a sense of validation and worthiness that we do not give ourselves, or we do not find within ourselves by some means, whether that means is religious or spiritual or non-spiritual or by whatever means. But it is never solid unless it is completely independent of anything or anyone that can jerk us around. And this is the truth that the first principle calls us back to. We simply have to accept our own and others' worth and dignity as we are, without needing to be, or needing to do, or needing to achieve anything to acquire it. This is so simple, no one will believe it. We live and move in a sea of forces which undermine at every turn this sense of the value of the person. And our first principle stands against this, embracing the belief that one's own life, whatever our situation, whatever our past, whatever our history, whatever our imperfections, whatever our limitations, has a meaning and a value that nothing, absolutely nothing, can take away from us. And this involves letting go of all comparisons, all evaluations, all judgments, all sense of our own incompleteness and imperfections, and finding a place where we can walk in the center of an awareness of our own infinite valuableness in the here and now of our lives. And this is as distant from self-abasement as it is narcissism. This is so simply true that no one will believe it. The other part of this first principle is human dignity. And the late Viktor Frankl has some keen insights into this matter of human dignity. Frankl, during World War II, was in a Nazi concentration camp. He experienced the complete and utter annihilation of human dignity. And his reflections rose out of this situation where the human value was reduced to its very lowest level. His reflections are still valid for us because we live in a world in which our value is continually undermined, devalued, and threatened, and trivialized. For Frankl, we cannot wait for a revelation to walk up to us to give us the dignity of human, the gift of human dignity and meaning. He wrote years after his concentration camp experience, "It did not really matter what we expected from life. We needed to stop asking about the meaning of life and instead to think of ourselves as those being continually questioned by life, daily and hourly. And life ultimately means to fulfill the tasks which it continually sets for the individual." Let me try to translate that passage and the other things Frankl says. Frankl is saying, and I think this is so much in harmony with our values, that each single person here has a very, very important contribution to make to life. Our contribution, in fact, our particular contribution, no one else can duplicate, because our contribution comes out of our special and unique history and context. But don't wait for someone to deliver a special letter from FedEx telling you about this. Just acquire the conviction that it is true and start acting like it, and you will find that it is true. So the events of life, the community around us, the needs of the community around us, the needs of the world, is a summon. And the question is not, where are our marching orders? The question is, how do we respond hourly and minutely to the summons which life addresses us by and through the needs around us? There is a part of each of us that knows what needs to be done, that knows how to do it, and knows that the summons to be called to service is there. We need to respond. And it is in giving ourselves to something greater than ourselves that we find dignity as human beings. But our actions need to be grounded in the knowledge and the certainty of our own value. Hence, worth and dignity belong together. They support one another. One of the great benefits of being a minister is that I see people practicing this, what I have spoken of, all the time. And indeed, I count it as a great gift that I have been able to witness the lives of service of people in this congregation. It inspires me greatly, and I thank you. This congregation is on the cusp of something new. It is embracing a new identity and a new life, even as it integrates what was most precious from the past as it moves into the future. And as a congregation, you are moving more and more toward creating a special space for influencing people to allow their lives to be guided by this mission, the principles of this religious movement, and the ends that you have chosen as a congregation. You are moving toward a place of influencing the world and community about you. Something is about to happen here in this congregation next week that will accelerate that process and move it to a higher level. And that is the movement towards a shared ministry with a new settled minister. And as you move towards candidate week, I encourage each of you to ask yourselves, what do we do as members of this congregation to be the best we can be as we embark on this new adventure of shared ministry? For have no doubt, the most important people for what happens in the future of this congregation are the people who are sitting in the pews right here, right now. May we, following the words of Gandhi, seek to be the change we want to see happen in the world. May it be so. Amen. I share with you this benediction. May an awareness of the gifts of life and the preciousness of each moment abide in us. May the memories we gather here give us hope for the future and for our lives. May the love we feel here bring strength to our hearts and resolve to our minds as we let our principles guide our lives. And may that peace which passes all understanding be in us and with us and among us until we meet again. Amen.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.